press the button, and we're off on another edition, or on another edition of Midday on the Rural Radio Network.
And what I can't figure out today is, where's Susan?
we can play if we want to, but I think we've got kind of a dead giveaway going on here today. Where is
back.
Susan, Susan?
Thank you. Susan's here. Susan brought you a present, didn't she?
You know, and I'm very sad to have to report that it's all gone.
Is it?
Yeah. You know, someone suggested way too late that I should keep at least one of the bubble wrap pops for on the air, but I'm such an obsessive with that stuff. And she, I don't know, how did you know?
A little bird flew by in this wind and told me.
And Dirk, I thought we were friends. I thought...
No, what? I'm sure it's all gone. Whatever makes Dirk happy. There's one.
He got the last one. Thanks.
And you made Bob jump.
You couldn't have waited until the 2 o'clock hour.
Right. Don't do that again.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to tell Susan not to keep getting new equipment because that's what we get every time we.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Susan is here, and
yes.
We're going to find out what's in her headlines today.
I am really, you know, I love stories that just get me excited about what's happening in agriculture, and the one at 12:45 definitely has done so. If you know Jared Holen, let him know that he's going to be on the air with us at 12:45 today, talking about a chicken barn that they are putting up. The trusses were going up yesterday when I talked to him, but if you could imagine, 35,000 hens and 5,000 roosters.
It sounds like
building.
A party to me.
It sounds like a party. It's like
good
a 7-1 7-1 ratio
that's,
on that
that's
one.
Good odds.
And those eggs when they hatch will be the future layers that put the eggs on your table when you eat breakfast.
Yum.
So, I know.
So this is in essence a breeder barn
it
for chickens.
It is a breeder barn for chickens. So we're going to talk more about that and his insight and diversification and what it means to Nebraska as well. That's at 12:45. Mm-hmm. And of course 12:19 we'll catch up with the folks at Water Street, talk about farm environment and young farmers, that whole entity that's all coming together. And then Cattlemen's College is at 1:17.
All right. Look forward to it all. Thank you. And here's Brandon Bennett of sports.
Once again, out of the bullpen, and there are so many national championships going on right now. Hastings College won their first-round game over a school in Arizona. Midland University plays in the NAIA National Championship Tournament going on right now in Sioux Falls. They play at 3 p.m. Hastings men's soccer had a 1-0 lead at halftime, and of course, UNK on the road, and we'll be talking about that and this head coaching search we have going on in Lincoln, that and more coming up.
You know, you got to admire how Scott Frost is coming across right now. You know, he's not betraying that anything has happened. He's put it all with his team for now.
As he should, because that's his employer, at least for right now, so we appreciate that.
He is doing it absolutely right.
Yes.
All right, Bob, what's in business?
Backers and foes of the Keystone XL are seeking some clarification in the recent ruling. That's one of the things we're watching. U.S. stocks are edging higher. U.S. home prices leap by the most in 3 years. And also a big thing's going on where Jerome Powell is before the Senate Banking Committee and having to answer questions about how he would be as the next chairman of the Federal Reserve.
And wherever you are, border to border, end to end, we hope that you are staying warm on this rather brisk day. We'll have weather here on your rural radio station as well as we get underway with Midday. Paul Perkins is in now with our ag weather brought to you by Kuhlman Repair, and I guess the official meteorological term for this is brisk.
Yes, especially with these winds right now, and much cooler on the temperatures, but actually these temperatures above normal for this time of year, even though it's quite a bit colder than yesterday.
The problem is we've gotten used to having it so much nicer.
Yes, we're going to be in for a big switch over the next several days, especially as we head towards next week. Yesterday we saw some record highs in much of the region, mid to upper 70s for most of us. It managed to get up to 84, though, at Valentine yesterday, and in the southwest part of Kansas, Elkhart hit 89 degrees in late November. Right now we have temperatures in the upper 40s to the low 50s for the most part. Our High pressure area pushing in behind departing low pressure today, and that cold front that moves through last night, that's going to continue those gusty north winds for today, but also give us some sunny to partly cloudy skies. Temperatures today about 20 degrees colder, if not more cool than that, than yesterday's record-setting warmth, but still about 10 degrees warmer than what we usually get this time of year. Some near-critical fire weather conditions are likely with some strong winds and dry air for today. Our temperatures cool off quickly tonight with some mostly clear skies and light winds as high pressure passes overhead. Could see some clouds in Kansas thanks to a weak area of low pressure that's passing right along the southern Kansas border into Oklahoma. Tomorrow will feel nice by the afternoon. Some lighter south winds on the way on the backside of high pressure sliding to the southeast. Expecting another cold front tomorrow night. That'll just cool our temperatures slightly, though, for Thursday. Friday into the weekend looking good. The flow becomes more westerly with mild highs in the 50s and some low 60s. We are watching a trough of low pressure digging into the west coast. That will track east next week. Due to the forecast model differences with this system, confidence pretty low, at least for the first part of next week, of any possible impacts with this system. But one impact, though, could be some cooler weather. Temperatures for Nebraska and Kansas are forecast to start warmer than normal for early next week. Then we'll trend to near normal and cooler than normal late next week through December 11th. We're going to go from weekend high temperatures this weekend in the upper 50s to 60s on into the probably 30s and low 40s by next weekend. So if you got any outdoor things that need to be done, you may want to get them done this weekend. A more active period for precipitation now in the long term. Above normal precipitation in the cards for Nebraska, Kansas, and the nation's midsection Sunday through December 11th. Weather factors driving the decisions of traders in the market include favorable rain in the forecast for key South America crop areas and a chance of needed precipitation in the southern plains about 10 days from now. Unusually mild weather will cover much of the U.S. into the weekend. That's when some cooler air will start to arrive in both the east and the far west. Rain near a cold front will gradually increase in coverage over the next few days, but most of the eastern half of the U.S. only expected to see about a half an inch or less. Frozen precipitation should be limited to some late-week snow from the Great Lakes into the northeast. The dry and mild conditions in the Midwest into early next month will help the remaining harvest. Still more than 10% of the corn in the field in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio. The chance remains for precipitation in the southern plains in about a week to 10 days. Winter wheat ratings in Oklahoma and Texas are more than 20 percentage points lower than last year for good to excellent totals. Declining subsoil moisture, the main cause, it remains a concern, especially in Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma with topsoil moisture, 75% very short to short, followed by Texas at 67% very short to short. Central Brazil crop areas expect beneficial rain to continue through the end of the week. Soybean planting now ahead of last year due to the improved rainfall pattern. And moderate to heavy rain in central Argentina's crop belt expected in the next 5 days. That includes the western half where there were concerns for dryness and reduced production.
All right, and your ag weather at the midday brought to you by Kuhlman Repair. Right now we're looking at north winds gusting to 35, and that humidity is only 24%. Guess we have to take this seriously.
Definitely. Probably hold off on any open burning with these strong winds today. And very, very dry air. And, of course, vegetation very dry because we've only had just a little bit of rain in many areas this month, or maybe even very little in some instances.
All right. Okay, well, that's the way it stacks up for today. And a reminder that we've got that app out there. If you have a smartphone, or maybe you're going to get one, the first thing you need to do is download that KRVN app. Or if you need weather anytime,
you can look it up at krvn.com.
Three key ag nominees remain unconfirmed as senators have held up votes on two. I'm Shaylee Peters with a midday check of your ag news here on the Rural Radio Network. Congress returns to Washington this week for what is scheduled to be a three-week session before the Christmas and New Year's holidays, with an agenda filled with taxes and budget issues, while three key nominees for agriculture positions remain unconfirmed. The Senate Agriculture Committee has approved the nomination of Bill Northey as Agriculture Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, but Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican out of Texas, has placed a hold on that nomination due to his concerns that President Donald Trump has been too favorable to the renewable fuels industry by maintaining the renewable fuels standard. Last week, Senator Charles Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, and Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, had promised to help bring the Northey nomination to a floor vote. The Senate Agriculture Committee has also held a hearing on Stephen Vaden to be USDA General Counsel, but has not voted on his nomination. Vaden's work for conservatives on voting rights is controversial. The Senate Finance Committee has approved the nomination of Greg Dowd to be the Chief U.S. Agriculture Negotiator. There has been no movement on Dowd's nomination since November 9th when Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, put a hold on the nomination. Meanwhile, the Senate faces a vote on its version of a tax reform bill, and both houses face the need to fund the government by December 8th when the current fundings run out. Trump met Monday with key Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee as senators seek to vote on their bill later this week. And many of us have plenty of leftovers still in the fridge from the Thanksgiving holiday, but those leftovers could make you sick. Bryce Duskett has more.
Only a few days after Thanksgiving, you have to eat, freeze, or throw away your leftovers. That's according to Cindy Bryson. She's a registered dietitian and extension educator for the Douglas Sarpy Extension Office. She says leftovers are only good for a few days.
Old turkey or any leftovers, the maximum amount you can keep them in your refrigerator is 4 days.
And what happens if you don't? Well, Cindy says it's all about the bacteria.
Bacteria grows even in your refrigerator, and especially think about turkey, think about Thanksgiving things. How many times has that been brought out of the refrigerator, sat on the table, gone back in, sat on the table? You've had turkey sandwiches and turkey soup and turkey hash, and every time it's brought out, bacteria grows even faster, and then you put it back in the fridge, and there's more bacteria in it, and it's cumulative. It just keeps growing and growing. So by 4 days, you need to get rid of it.
Cindy adds that freezing your leftover turkey is one great solution instead of throwing the product away. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bryce Duskett.
And the 2017 Nebraska Soybean Day and Machinery Expo will assist soybean producers in planning for their next growing season. The expo is 8:30 a.m. to 2:15 p.m. this upcoming December 14th at the Pavilion at the Saunders County Fairgrounds in Wahoo. The expo opens with coffee, donuts, and the opportunity to view equipment and exhibitor booths. Speakers start at 9 a.m. and include university researchers and specialists, Nebraska Soybean Checkoff representatives, soybean growers, and private industry representatives. We are bringing back Jason Norsworthy due to the popularity of his presentation last year, said Nebraska Extension educator Keith Gluin. This year, he is going to focus on a topic that has gained widespread attention and is on the mind of most growers, dicamba. Registration is free, but the Saunders County Soybean Growers Organization requests donations of one or more cans of non-perishable food to the food pantry, and registration is available at the door the day of the expo. More on this and other ag news can be found at ruralradio.com. With a midday check of your ag news, I'm Shaylee Peters on the Rural Radio Network.
On our program today, we talk about today's farm environment and the young farmer with Dean Hefta, Director, Water Street Solutions. Dean, how is this current ag environment affecting younger farmers?
Well, it's certainly an interesting time for young farmers. And it's common for the next generation of farm leaders to have a certain amount of anxiety maybe around their ability to run the farm in the future. And it seems like the current environment could be extremely intimidating for young farmers. But I believe this is actually possibly the best times and opportunities that many of them are going to be experiencing. Now, that sounds counterintuitive, but the learning and the practicing and the skill development in this environment is going to be extremely valuable for the future leadership on the farm. You know, often the best managers are really made in the worst of times. When things are good and margins are big, boy, you don't have to be really solid in your management skills. For a lot of farmers, they'll tell you today, the lessons that they learned in the 80s have been invaluable for them through their whole career. And when you're farming then, you get this real-time education when times are tough that you just can't get when there's lots of margin.
Dean, what's the best way to get that experience?
Having a chance to watch others make decisions in a tight margin environment like this is an opportunity, as well as making decisions of our own. So if we're not in the thick of it yet and we're working our way into it, not only do we need to learn from observation, but have some of those experiences ourselves, maybe on a smaller scale. And now is the time to really develop those management skills, being open and willing to learn new approaches and trying different alternatives. And this happens along the path to making the best decisions for the farm that are able to be made in the environment we're in. And really the first part that comes to mind is the financial management of the farm. Planning ahead and running the farm by the numbers is really going to be a key skill as we move forward. Future farm leaders need to be able to use financial terminology as they're communicating with their lenders, knowing how to interpret key financial statements and information, using forward-looking projections for the future crop year, and working with independent financial advisors, being a part of discussions and decisions that are being made because of that analysis, and really being involved in these types of decisions today when times are tight, help us, even if we're not in charge, to be more ready when the responsibility is more on our shoulder.
What are some other ways we can work on this?
Another area, I think, is communication and negotiation skills. There's no question that the farm leader of the future has to be an excellent communicator. They have to work with suppliers and vendors and lenders and advisors. And so you're building this bigger team than we've ever seen before. And another piece is how to communicate and negotiate with landlords. Future leaders should be shadowing and observing and participating in how the older generation does this and learning their own skills, you know, being a part of those banker meetings. And finally, making sure that a broader view about what's going on is happening. And it can be difficult to think about it when we're in the middle of tough times, to think that big picture view. But it's the tough times that they don't last forever, and neither do the good times. And the real test of this generation is the kind of future leaders that we develop. And the farm leader of the future is going to be doing that planning and providing that leadership, and they'll draw on these experiences we're having today. Another way to get more exposure is different skills of how we're, things that we're reading, things we're exposed to, and even podcasts that are out there. I host Modern Farm Business Podcasts, and that can be found wherever you get podcasts. We talk about leadership topics and skills, so I encourage anybody to check that out.
For more information, go to waterstreet.org or call 866-249-2528.
You're listening to Midday on the Rural Radio Network, and it's time for sports today with Brandon Betts.
Good afternoon, Dirk. The 38th annual NAIA Women's Volleyball National Championship Tournament started today at the Tyson Event Center. The championship runs through Saturday, December 2nd, with a national championship final scheduled for 7 p.m. Central Time. Hastings College won their first round game 3-0 over Embry-Riddle of Arizona, and Midland University plays later this afternoon at 3 p.m. against Marion of Indiana. And at the end of regulation, the Hastings College men's soccer team is tied 1-1 with nationally number one ranked William Carey. Two 10-minute periods and then penalty kicks await. Well, wherever he goes and whatever he does this week, Central Florida head football coach Scott Frost will be asked about the open coaching position at Nebraska. Yesterday, Frost took a number of questions regarding his future plans.
I'd be hurt if Nebraska wasn't interested in me. We're undefeated. I'm from there. When you win, a lot of people are interested in you. That doesn't matter. Like I said, what matters is these players and what they've accomplished. They deserve the focus to be on them and not me.
Central Florida plays Memphis for the American Football Conference title on Saturday in Orlando. Frost took over a program that 3 years ago went winless. Last year they finished 6-6, and this year they're undefeated going into their matchup with the Memphis Tigers. Kickoff on Saturday is set for 11 a.m. Central Time. And the third-ranked Wisconsin Badgers football team say they won't dwell on their recent past at the Big Ten football championship games going into this weekend's tilt against number 8 Ohio State. The Badgers blew a 14-point halftime lead last year in falling to Penn State, and they were blown out in 2014 by the Buckeyes. But the stakes are even higher this season, as the undefeated Badgers stand a good chance of getting into the college football playoff with a win on Saturday. And the Big Ten announced its all Big Ten defensive and special teams award today. No Nebraska players made the defensive team, nor were any named honorable mention. For Iowa, linebacker Josie Jewell and defensive back Josh Jackson made the first team. Husker kicker Drew Brown did receive special team honorable mention honors. Trevor Siemian is the Denver Broncos' starting quarterback once again after Paxton Lynch started Sunday's loss at Oakland. Denver coach Vance Joseph said in his weekly radio show on Monday that Lynch will miss 2 to 4 weeks with a high ankle sprain on his right ankle. And the Nebraska School Activities Association Board of Directors has selected 4 candidates to interview for the NSAA Executive Director position. Dr. Jim Tenneper will be retiring from the association in late July, and finalists for the Executive Director position are Jay Beller, Superintendent at Battle Creek, John Cerny, Superintendent at Bancroft Rosalie, Jeff Johnson, Principal at Papillion-La Vista South High School, and Jim Kent, Superintendent at Dundee County, Stratton. Interviews will be scheduled in January with the new executive director beginning his service on or about July 1, 2018. That's a look at sports. Stay tuned. More of Midday is straight ahead. You're listening to the Rural Radio Network.
I'm Dave Schroeder. Clear skies tonight, lows from 21 to 27 degrees. Lincoln police have identified two persons of interest in the disappearance of a 24-year-old Lincoln woman. Sydney Loof was reported missing on November 16th from her Lincoln residence, and her last confirmed sighting was in Wilbur, Nebraska. Lincoln police say they are looking for Aubrey Trail, a 51-year-old man, and a female, 23-year-old Bailey Boswell, both of whom resided in Wilbur and have connections in multiple states. Anyone with information is asked to contact authorities immediately, and their pictures can be found on the KRVN web and Facebook pages. 2 years after Iowa and Nebraska raised their gas taxes, both states are seeing a flurry of new roadway projects at a time when national infrastructure efforts have stalled. Officials say the extra revenue has allowed them to move forward quickly with overdue bridge repairs and plans for major highway projects. Both states raised their gas taxes in 2015 with support from farm groups, truckers, and even some conservative Republicans who championed tax cuts. Iowa passed its 10-cent per gallon increase first. A recent analysis shows the tax has generated an extra $515 million for projects in all 99 counties. Nebraska approved a 6-cent increase. The following year, state officials created a program that will funnel $400 million into road and bridge projects. The names of finalists for the Nebraska School Activities Association executive director position has been released. They include Bancroft Rosalie Superintendent Dr. John Cerny, Battle Creek Superintendent Jay Beller, Papillion La Vista South Principal Jeff Johnson, and Dundee County Stratton Superintendent Jim Kent. Current director Dr. Jim Tenneper will be retiring in late July. Interviews will be scheduled in January with a new director beginning their duties around July 1st. Kansas officials are insisting that eliminated and delayed payments to a pension fund for teachers and other government workers won't affect retirees. The officials with the Kansas Public Employees Retirement System assured retirees' financial safety to a legislative oversight committee on Monday. CAPERS is a pension system that manages retirement accounts of more than 300,000 members, including Kansas State employees. Our app is a perfect companion to your phone. Download it for free in the App Store or Google Play. Reporting from the KRVN News Center, I'm Dave Schroeder.
It's the opportunity to diversify the farming operation. Good afternoon, I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network. Jared and Michaela Holland broke ground just last month on a new chicken barn. But it's not your typical chicken barn, as this barn raises the future generations of the poultry industry. Here's Jared talking about the updates to the operation.
We're right in the middle of the construction. They are actually setting rafters on top of the building right now.
And kind of explain to us what the facility, how big it is, how many birds it's going to hold.
The building is 670 foot by 67 foot. And they hold about 40,000 birds, 35,000 hens, and 5,000 roosters.
Now, this will be mainly then used as a breeding facility to get fertile eggs?
It will be a breeding barn for Henrik's Genetics that has a hatchery in Grand Island. They bring the birds in the 1st of March, and they'll stay in the barn for a full year, roughly. Then we get the manure after we move the birds out, but they'll be producing fertile eggs, and then those chicks that they hatch out from Henrik's, they'll sell those on down the line, and those chicks will be laying table eggs after they're sold.
What is your background? Do you guys have other chicken facilities there on the farm, or is this something that kind of intrigued you guys as a family to decide to do?
It was a chance to diversify the farm. We None of us have any experience with chickens before. This is the first we've done anything with chickens. This will be the parent stock, and then eventually they'll be laying table eggs, the chicks that are hatched.
What has intrigued you about, you know, being a part of this process, watching this building go up, and the imprint that you guys are going to make on agriculture in the state?
Well, I think it really gives our farm a chance to diversify. I mean, this is really a new thing in this area, and it gives it a chance to consume more grain in our area and consume more grain in our state, being a row crop farm only. I think it's a good chance for this area to see that raising chickens isn't so bad, and it's a good chance for other people to see ways to diversify their farm in this area.
What type of education have you had to do, and maybe talking about the facility with some of your neighbors?
Well, the first step we did to kind of educate ourselves, because we know very little about the poultry industry, so my dad and I drove out to Pennsylvania last winter, tour a couple barns just to see what it was like, to see if the smell was going to be bad, if the manure was going to be unbearable to be around, if the chickens weren't very good to be around. And that's kind of been the main concern with all of our neighbors, what the kind of environment it was going to be like around this barn. And so we've really had to tell our neighbors that it's a very clean environment, and it's all automated and computerized environment inside the barn, making it very, very livable around the barn.
How many folks then will be helping you out, or will it just be family taking care of these birds?
So far, we haven't decided what we're going to do, but it should be 1 to 2 people working in the barn daily. So it'll probably be mostly family helping out in the barn. My wife and I plan on working in it. And then maybe sometimes have some hired help to help also.
Talk about the eggs and how they're picked up. I found it really interesting. I think folks might think that these birds are all in cages, but you guys have the opportunity. You've got nesters out for them. You've got... talk, I guess, about the process of how you guys collect these fertile eggs before they go on to Grand Island.
Yeah, the building is actually all open. There isn't any birds in a cage. There's actually six pens within the building, and the chickens are free to move all around, and they're on a slatted floor, so they aren't in their manure. The manure falls down to the bottom floor, so they're in a very clean environment. And then when they lay their eggs, they lay it inside of a nest, which is kind of a dark area because that's where they're attracted to. And then the eggs kind of roll onto a conveyor belt inside of the nest. And then the conveyor belt brings all of the eggs down to one end of the building. And then they go down a conveyor belt into a packer. And then we stack them all up onto crates, and that's how we ship them out.
Is there anything else, maybe some advice that you might have for a young producer out there that says we would like to diversify as well?
Yeah, I think any young producer out there should look at any opportunity they can, even if it's new to the area, and research anything they can, because there's a lot of opportunities that the state has never seen before.
My conversation with Jared Holand. By the way, the family plans an open house in February to show off the new facility. I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network.
So now let's get a review of the livestock futures trade from Joe Teal at Great Plains Commodities. Joe?
Yeah, it was a mixed day. Cattle a little lower, feeders higher, and hogs higher. So kind of a different venue for the day. We started out lower on the cattle and stayed lower most of the day. But we did make a little comeback, only closing moderately lower. I think some of the auctions might be firming up just a little bit, and I think that's what brought back especially the feeders as well as the lower grains. And it may have kind of spilled over into the cattle to take them well off their lows for the day. So, kind of a choppy day, I'd say. When you look at the cutouts were lower again after being lower last night for the beef, and lower at noon. Moderate to light trade in the boxes right now, and that's what I think pushed the market lower. And then I think we got short covering. And like I said, it sounded like some of the auctions were firming up just a little bit. Feeders closed moderately higher, but the winner really was the hogs. They had some triple-digit gains. Cash seems to be firm. Cutouts were higher. So everything kind of rolling along. We're now pretty good premium to the index. The index in the 62 range, and the D's hogs up in the 65, trying to approach the 60.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Teal can be reached at 800-328-0134 for Great Plains Commodities. Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network.
Risk management and beef production lead the workshop topics for the 2017-18 Farmer Rancher College. Good afternoon on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Bryce Duskett. Now in its 17th year, the program provides an educational workshop experience for producers in South Central Nebraska through a collaborative effort of business, industry, and higher education leaders. Brandy Vandewall is an extension educator in Fillmore County, and she joins me now on the phone as we talk about this year's Farmer and Rancher College. Brandy, you have three different workshops offered. Tell us about these and this year's college.
Well, this year we're having three programs. We're, first of all, kicking off our annual Dr. David Cole program. This will be on December 7th. And then in January, we'll have our annual Cow-Calf College out at the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. And then in February, we'll wrap up with kind of an update on crop insurance, as well as a farm policy bill update, and then just some other important tips for producers to know.
And Brandy, as I mentioned, this is the 17th year of doing this. Tell us more about how this event got started and why it's been going on for 17 years in a row now.
Yeah, so this originated in 2000, and we've been very fortunate that we've had over 74 local agribusinesses and organizations that have contributed to the Farmers and Ranchers College. So each year, a lot of businesses in the area of, you know, Fillmore, Clay, Knuckles, Thayer County put in some donations so that we're able to provide this program at no cost to producers. So it's kind of unique, you know, from that standpoint that we can get some extremely high-quality programs because of their sponsorship.
Talk about the importance of having this college every year for farmers and ranchers alike. Why is that important?
Well, so the fun thing about the Farmers and Ranchers College is that it's really got a high-quality reputation, and so we have a lot of producers each year that are looking forward to what those programs are going to be, and a lot of repeat attenders that enjoy coming to the program. And so we also have a board of directors, so we have a lot of bankers, we have some producers, a farm service agency director, and myself. So we're able to brainstorm what are some of those cutting edge and current topics out there that are on, you know, farmers and ranchers' minds.
Now, if somebody is interested in attending this, you'd like them to RSVP. How should they do that?
Well, they can RSVP through our fillmore.unl.edu website. And what that does is just kind of help prevent, line at the door. So all they'll have to do is kind of put a check mark that they are attending. We do our Cow-Calf College as well as our February crop insurance and farm policy update. We do request an RSVP at least a week ahead of time so we can get our meal planning in.
And Brandy, you've been doing this for a while. Tell us about what you're most excited about for this season of the Farmer and Rancher College.
Well, yeah, this will be my 12th year in extension, so my 12th year with the program. And Dr. Cole is always such a dynamic speaker and has a lot of great information, you know, to present with producers. And I'm also pretty excited about our Cow-Calf College this year. We've got Mary Drewandowski, who is a beef specialist, and she's been a, kind of a favorite within the past 2 years of our cow-calf college, as well as Dr. Kip Lukasevich, who is a veterinarian and another dynamic speaker for our cow-calf college for those producers who like to attend.
That was Brandy Vandewall. She's an extension educator in Fillmore County. We've been discussing the upcoming Farmer and Rancher College. If you'd like to learn more information or RSVP, you can go to fillmore.unl.edu. On the Rural Radio Network, Bryce Duskett reporting.
Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network, and surprise, surprise, right at the last few minutes of trade, we turned around in wheat, at least hard red winter wheat futures. We're joined by John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago and publisher of the newsletter This Week in Grain. So something happened here where funds started buying right at the end.
Yeah, we're really ringing out the short side of the trade right now. I think in corn and wheat, delivery pressure being that theme, and we got down, I think, to around 66 cents December corn versus December wheat, and that is a level that really has held here in the past, 60 cents being a pretty good low. So I think corn got a little bit of a sell into the break and wheat a little bit of a buy. I think, maybe we have one more day of this, but once we get through Wednesday's close, first notice day will be upon us, and I think you'll have a whole new kind of profile of trade as some of the longs maybe come in down here, and myself included, looking at anything below 350 corn in March's value. So shorter term, you got to kind of hang with it a little longer, but I do think you'll see some better days when we get to the end of the week.
Has the basis remained pretty steady in the wheat?
Well, kind of scanning the online reports, it feels like the basis has gotten a little bit better. Wheat, obviously, is a little bit of a different market, given that you have VSR and you don't have to see convergence. I mean, we have a dollar below where the futures are going to go off, which is a little bit weird. You know, in corn, it tends to be a little bit more dictated of where the ports are. But, I think, again, this is a market that is a lot more speculative. But that's the value. The value is in the paper and the opportunity, not so much in the actual product. Buying storage and looking for some place to put it at this point is a challenge. But once we get through the end of the week, I think, we get into December, the focus will be more on, what's going to take it to get it out of storage. I understand certain folks are going to have to be moving products as we get to the end of the year, but the time to sell corn is really more in the March time period, and I think we'll have a run in the card. Looking at 350 March corn, I would think 370, 375 would be a target. Not sure we'll hit it right away, but I think by the time maybe Valentine's Day rolls around, you'll see those prices.
USDA issued long-term planning for acreage and came up 91 million acres for corn and soybeans for 2018. But that's a long ways off, isn't it?
Yeah, I would disregard those numbers. They were way off last year, and I think the Ag Forum will paint a lot more of a picture. And if prices stay down, I think you'll see more beans move the other way. I do think you got to count on 90, 89 million acres of corn, just given the yields. Guys out east in the northern part of the country that did 180-plus bushels per acre, 200, 220 in a lot of cases, even higher. Those guys are going to push corn, even with the board at 380 they've done in the last couple of years. So beans probably had the most upside, but I think corn has a good product here.
John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst, Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago.